Cosmic Plasma, Chapter 2, Electric Currents in Space Plasmas. A Professor's Lecture on Hannes Alfvén, Second Chapter. Good morning, everyone. Today we continue with Chapter 2 of Alfvén's Cosmic Plasma. If Chapter 1 was about how we got plasma physics wrong, Chapter 2 is about how to get it right. And the key insight is deceptively simple. We need to think about electric currents, not just magnetic fields. Now, this might sound like a minor technical distinction, but it's not. It's a profound shift in how we understand the universe. By the end of this lecture, you'll see why Alfvén believed that ignoring electric currents led cosmology and astrophysics down blind alleys for decades. Part 1, The Dualism at the Heart of Physics. Alfvén opens the chapter by reminding us that physics has been dualistic since the early 20th century. Some phenomena are best described by fields. Others are best described by particles. Light can be treated as waves or as photons. Matter can be treated as particles or as quantum waves. This dual nature runs deep. But there's another dualism that's just as important, though less recognized, the dualism between magnetic fields and electric currents. Here's the thing. In plasma physics, if you know the magnetic field everywhere, you can calculate the electric current. And if you know the electric current everywhere, you can calculate the magnetic field. Mathematically, they're equivalent. You can translate between them using one of Maxwell's equations. So why does it matter which one you use? It matters because human beings aren't infinitely intelligent calculating machines. We use formalisms to think. And different formalisms make different aspects of reality visible or invisible to us. When you use the magnetic field formalism, certain phenomena jump out at you. But other phenomena become nearly impossible to see. The magnetic field description is great for understanding wave propagation, the motion of high-energy particles, and the anisotropic properties of plasma. These are what Alfvén calls passive plasma regions, places where things are relatively smooth and well-behaved. But there are other phenomena that absolutely require you to think explicitly about the electric current. Double layers. Energy transfer from one region to another. Explosive events like solar flares. Filamentary structures. The cellular organization of space. These occur in what Alfvén calls active plasma regions, and if you try to understand them using only the magnetic field picture, you will fail. The problem is that magnetic fields are easy to measure. You put a magnetometer on a spacecraft and you get numbers. Electric currents are hard to measure directly. So naturally, space scientists present everything in terms of magnetic field configurations. And over time, people forgot that there was another way of looking at things. Part 2. Why frozen-in field lines are dangerous. One of the most influential concepts in plasma physics is the idea of frozen-in magnetic field lines. The idea is that in a highly conducting plasma, the magnetic field is locked to the plasma. If the plasma moves, the field lines move with it. This concept is sometimes useful. Under certain conditions, it gives correct predictions. But Alfvén warns us that it's also dangerous because it creates the illusion of understanding when no real understanding exists. Here's the problem. A magnetic field line is, by definition, a line that's everywhere parallel to the magnetic field. That's all it is. It's a mathematical abstraction for visualizing the field. If the current system changes, the shape of the field lines changes. But it's meaningless to ask whether a field line moves from one place to another. Field lines don't have identity. They're not things that persist through time. When people talk about frozen-in field lines, they're pretending that field lines are physical objects that can be tracked. And this leads to even worse concepts, like field line reconnection and magnetic merging. The idea of magnetic reconnection is that field lines from different sources can connect, disconnect, and reconnect in new configurations, releasing energy in the process. This has been invoked to explain everything from solar flares to magnetic substorms. Alphen argues this is fundamentally confused. The energy in these explosive events doesn't come from field lines reconnecting. It comes from the disruption of electric currents. The magnetic field in the region where the explosion happens is often nearly constant. The energy is stored in the electric circuit as a whole, and it's released when something disrupts the current flow. To illustrate this, Alphen asks us to consider the magnetosphere in a completely different way. Instead of drawing magnetic field lines, he suggests we imagine the Earth's magnetic field being produced by a current-carrying coil at the Earth's center. The interplanetary field comes from a very large coil far away. The various features of the magnetosphere, the magnetopause, the tail, the auroral currents, all correspond to additional coil systems. In this picture, the magnetic field is static. It doesn't move. Charged particles move through this static field according to the forces they experience. There's no need for frozen-in field lines moving with the plasma. There's no need for reconnection. Everything becomes clearer. Part 3, filaments everywhere. Now we come to one of the most important observational facts about cosmic plasmas: they love to form filaments. Wherever we look, plasmas organize themselves into thin thread-like structures. In the aurora, we see auroral rays, filaments parallel to the magnetic field that can be as thin as 100 meters. In the solar atmosphere, we see prominences, spicules, coronal streamers, and polar plumes, all filamentary. Cometary tails show filaments. Interstellar nebulae, when photographed with contrast enhancement, reveal networks of filaments that aren't visible in ordinary images. Why does plasma do this? Alphen argues that these filaments are produced by electric currents. When current flows through a plasma, it tends to constrict into narrow channels. There are several reasons for this. The first is the pinch effect. When current flows through a plasma, it creates a magnetic field that wraps around the current. This magnetic field exerts an inward force on the current-carrying plasma. It's like parallel wires carrying current in the same direction; they attract each other. In a plasma, this attraction compresses the current into a narrower channel. The balance between this inward electromagnetic pressure and the outward thermal pressure of the plasma leads to what's called the Bennet relation. This is a precise mathematical relationship between the current, the temperature, and the number of particles in the channel. It tells you exactly how much current is needed to confine a plasma of a given temperature. There's another important configuration called a force-free magnetic field. In this case, the current flows along the magnetic field lines, creating a spiraling structure sometimes called a magnetic rope. The magnetic field wraps around like the strands of a rope, and the whole structure can persist stably. These filamentary structures are observed everywhere we can actually send spacecraft to measure. In the aurora. In the ionosphere of Venus, where flux ropes about 20 kilometers in diameter have been directly detected. It's reasonable to assume they exist everywhere in the cosmos, even in regions we can't visit directly. The filamentary structure of cosmic plasma has important consequences. It means plasma is not a smooth, homogeneous medium. It's organized. It has structure. And that structure is created by electric currents. Part 4, boundary conditions and invisible energy transfer. Here's something that sounds obvious but was largely ignored by theorists for decades. What happens inside a region of plasma depends on what's happening outside that region. In electrical engineering, this is completely understood. If you want to know what a circuit element does, you have to know what circuit it's connected to. The same resistor behaves completely differently depending on whether it's connected to a battery, a capacitor, or an inductor. The same is true for plasma. If electric current flows through a region of plasma, the behavior of that plasma depends on the entire circuit through which the current flows. You cannot understand what happens locally without understanding the global configuration. Alphen illustrates this with a striking analogy. Imagine looking at the Earth from space at night. You can see city lights, which are places where electrical energy is being dissipated. You might also see the lights of hydroelectric dams, which are places where electrical energy is being generated. But you almost certainly cannot see the power lines that connect them. The same thing happens in space plasmas. We can sometimes see where energy is being released, in the aurora, in solar flares, in active regions. We can sometimes identify where energy is being generated, in the photosphere of the sun, in the motion of the solar wind past the magnetosphere. But the transmission of energy from one place to another is often invisible. This is why Alphen insists on thinking in terms of complete circuits. You have to trace the current from where it's generated to where it's dissipated. You have to account for the voltage drops along the way. You have to include the inductance and resistance of the whole system. Only then can you understand how energy moves through the plasma. Theories that ignore this, that focus only on what happens inside a limited region without properly accounting for the boundary conditions, will get wrong answers. Alphen specifically calls out magnetic merging theories as suffering from exactly this flaw. They try to explain energy release without properly specifying where the energy comes from or how it gets to the release point. Part 5, Electric Double Layers. Now we come to one of the most important and least appreciated structures in plasma physics, the electric double layer. A double layer is a thin region in a plasma where there's a large electric field. On one side of the layer, the electric potential is one value. On the other side, it jumps to a significantly different value. Particles crossing the layer get accelerated or decelerated depending on their charge. The name comes from the charge distribution. There's a layer of positive charge and a layer of negative charge, close together. Together they produce the potential jump. Double layers have been studied in the laboratory for over half a century, but their importance in cosmic plasmas wasn't recognized until relatively recently. They can form in many ways. When plasma contacts a wall or electrode, a double layer forms as a sheath. When two regions of plasma have different temperatures, a double layer often forms at the boundary. When current density gets high enough that the drift velocity of electrons approaches their thermal velocity, double layers can form spontaneously. Here's why double layers matter so much. When a double layer forms, it creates a localized region where particles are accelerated. The energy for this acceleration comes from the electric circuit. If the current through the double layer is I and the voltage drop across it is V, then energy is being released at a rate of I times V. This is how the aurora works. Electrons are accelerated in double layers high above the ionosphere, at altitudes of about one Earth radius. These accelerated electrons then slam into the upper atmosphere and produce the light we see. The voltage drop can be several thousand volts, producing nearly monochromatic electron beams. Now, here's where it gets dramatic. Under certain conditions, a double layer can explode. Remember that any electric circuit containing inductance is intrinsically explosive. The energy stored in the magnetic field of the circuit is 1/2 Li squared, where L is the inductance and I is the current. If the circuit is suddenly disrupted, all that energy has to go somewhere. It gets dumped into the point of disruption. Certain types of double layers can become unstable and suddenly disrupt the current. When this happens, the inductance of the entire circuit forces the energy to concentrate at the double layer. The voltage across the layer skyrockets. Particles are accelerated to enormous energies. This is an exploding double layer. Alphen believes that exploding double layers are responsible for many of the most violent events in the cosmos. Solar flares. Magnetic substorms. Stellar flares. Even certain phenomena in comets. In each case, energy that was stored over a large region of space gets suddenly concentrated and released at a single point. This is completely different from the magnetic reconnect ion picture. The energy doesn't come from field lines rearranging. It comes from the disruption of current in an inductive circuit. The magnetic field near the explosion site may be nearly constant. The energy is delivered electromagnetically through the circuit from distant regions where it was stored. Part 6, Plasma Cables and the Transmission of Power. Alphen introduces a beautiful concept, the plasma cable. A plasma cable is a filamentary current channel that can transmit electromagnetic power from one region to another. Think of it as the cosmic equivalent of a power transmission line. The cable carries current along the magnetic field. It's surrounded by an electrostatic sheath that insulates it from the surrounding plasma. Inside the cable, the plasma properties can be very different from outside. The density might be lower or higher. The chemical composition can be different because the electromagnetic forces selectively accumulate certain elements. Along the length of the cable, there may be double layers where some of the transmitted power is converted to particle acceleration. If a double layer explodes, the current can be disrupted and rerouted. We see plasma cables in the auroral current system, transferring energy from the equatorial magnetosphere down to the polar ionosphere. We see them in solar prominences, where motions in the photosphere drive currents that can explode as solar flares. The coronal streamers and polar plumes on the Sun are probably plasma cables connecting to the large heliospheric current system. Even at galactic scales, Alphen suggests that plasma cables might be at work. The double radio sources, those pairs of radio-emitting regions found on opposite sides of many galaxies, might be powered by current systems analogous to the heliospheric circuit, but scaled up by 9 orders of magnitude. Part 7, The Cellular Structure of Space. All of this leads to a remarkable conclusion about the large-scale structure of space, its cellular. Throughout the regions we've explored with spacecraft, we keep finding current sheets. Thin layers where the magnetic field direction changes, the plasma density jumps, the temperature shifts. The magnetopause separating Earth's magnetic domain from the solar wind. The neutral sheet in the magnetotail. The heliospheric current sheet that separates the north and south magnetic hemispheres of the Sun. These current sheets are boundaries. They separate regions of space with different properties. And they're remarkably thin, sometimes just tens of times the ion gyroscope radius. Here's the crucial point, you cannot see these sheets from a distance. A spacecraft detects a current sheet only when it actually passes through it. If you're observing from far away, there's no sign that the sheet exists. This means that space in general probably has a cellular structure that we can't detect remotely. Interstellar space, intergalactic space, all of it may be divided into cells separated by current sheets. We have no way of knowing how big these cells are or how many there are. We only know that wherever we've actually gone and measured, we've found them. This is a radically different picture from the smooth, homogeneous cosmos that's often assumed in astrophysical theories. If space really is cellular, with different conditions in different cells and current sheets at the boundaries, then many of our models need to be revised. Part 8, Passive and Active Regions. To summarize the organization of plasma, Alphen divides it into passive and active regions. Passive regions fill most of space. They transmit waves. They guide high-energy particles. The plasma in these regions is relatively smooth and can often be described by the traditional magnetic field formalism. Classical plasma theory works reasonably well here. Active regions are different. These are the filaments and current sheets where intense electromagnetic activity occurs. They may occupy a small fraction of the total volume, but they dominate the behavior of the system. Energy is transferred through them. Particles are accelerated in them. The structure of the surrounding passive regions is determined by them. The boundary between passive and active regions is often marked by discontinuities. The plasma doesn't smoothly transition from one state to another. Instead, it jumps. This is another manifestation of the general tendency of plasma to be inhomogeneous, to divide itself into distinct regions rather than mixing smoothly. You can see this most dramatically in the ionosphere. The auroral zones are where active magnetospheric regions connect to the upper atmosphere. The rest of the ionosphere connects to passive regions and receives much less energy. Looking at the aurora, you're essentially seeing a map of where the active regions are. Closing thoughts. What's the takeaway from this chapter? First, we need to think about electric currents explicitly. The magnetic field formalism alone cannot capture essential physics. Second, plasma organizes itself into structures, filaments, cables, sheets, cells. It's not a smooth medium. Understanding this organization requires the current picture. Third, double layers are crucial. They accelerate particles. They release energy. When they explode, they cause the most violent events in the cosmos. Fourth, energy transfer through plasma works like energy transfer through an electrical circuit. You have to consider the whole circuit, not just local regions. Fifth, space has a cellular structure. Thin current sheets divide it into regions with different properties. This cellular structure is invisible to remote observation. These ideas were radical when Alphen wrote them, and in many circles they remain underappreciated today. But spacecraft measurements have confirmed them again and again. The cosmos is an electromagnetic system, not just a gravitational one. And if we want to understand it, we need to follow the currents. That's chapter 2. Next time, we'll go deeper into the circuits themselves. Until then, think about the difference between seeing magnetic fields and seeing the currents that create them. The universe looks very different depending on which picture you use. Any questions?